Rabbi Grunstein is in charge of the placement in the program that Rabbi Tal from and myself in Auckland were trained as rabbis. It's called the Amiel Ultrastorm program. And they are training young rabbis to go overseas to small communities and give them all the necessary preparations in order when they go to somewhere that is totally different than the environment that we know in Israel, and hopefully be successful in their placement. So, without any further ado, we have Rabbi Grunstein to talk to you about, I think, one of the challenges that we all have living so far away from a big Jewish community, the farming of the world. Please take the opportunity to ask Rabbi Grunstein anything you would like about life. As Kiwis or Jewish boy or girl in our modern times in New Zealand. So, Rabbi Grunstein, thank you for coming, and it's a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Rabbi Friedler. First of all, I don't want to shock anyone. Have you ever seen a rabbi without a suit and tie before? No? Okay. There's a rabbi here that just spoke and he doesn't even have a tie on. So if I take off my suit, am I going to give you like a culture shock you won't be able to get over? Or can I do that? Thank God. From a camp, and now I can be myself. Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be in New Zealand for the first time and to be with you for the first time, because I never understood why people want to go to camp in the winter. But you are very brave. I just love the style when I'm looking around the room. I see people in shorts and sweatshirts. I find that amazing. I really do. As Rabbi Friedler said, I don't want to talk about anything you don't want to hear, so I'm open to all your questions. I can't promise you all the answers, but I'd love to hear your questions. The one thing I do want to share with you is how lucky you are, and I'll explain why. I'm sure you have heard from all your friends that you may or may not have in Melbourne and Sydney and other big Jewish communities around the world how wonderful it is to live in a big Jewish community. Because let's think about all the things that you as Kiwis don't have. Let's begin. What don't you have as Jews living here?
Bamba.
Sometimes, very rarely, but you sometimes
Bamba.
Get.
Well, let's take that a step further. What's your name?
Eden.
Eden says no Bamba, but let's take that a step further. How many kosher restaurants are there in New Zealand?
One.
One. Not fair for an entire country.
The deli, if you consider the deli as a restaurant. Yeah.
Pretty low compared to Sydney and Melbourne. Okay, what else? Lack of kosher restaurants. Lack of high school. No Eruv. You can't carry on Shabbat from your house outside. Very, very annoying. What else? I'm sorry, yeah, small community, where you live, where you all function.
Hey, by the way, Rabbi, there are people here that don't live in Wellington or Auckland. I think you're from Hamilton, right? So even a smaller community than we know in... Yeah, a few Jewish families in Hamilton.
You should know that until exactly one day ago, I thought there was one Hamilton in the world. And that was in Ontario, near Toronto in Canada. I just found out there's two Hamiltons.
Yeah, it's 15 minutes away from here.
Now I have the pleasure of learning that there's someone living there. What's your name?
Noga.
In Hamilton. You don't have, I'm assuming, kosher restaurants. You don't have an Eruv. And I'm pretty sure that kosher food is hard to come by. Let me ask you another question. How many Jewish schools are there in Hamilton? Zero. So Jewish schools. And I'm sure that if we go through the list, we'll go on and on and on, and everyone will be convinced, wow, we are living in the worst place in the world to be Jewish. It's so hard to be a Jew. Who in their right mind would want to do it? Because look at what we're lacking. It's so much easier to be a Jew in Jerusalem, in New York, and in so many other places in the world that have the kosher restaurants, the Eruv, and your Bamba. My question is, are they lucky or not? And I hate to say this, but I come from Israel, and so does Noga, and I'm looking around the room, and I'm very jealous of you, and I'll explain why. Where I live, everyone is Jewish, everyone happens to be religious, and yet because of that, they take it for granted that they're Jewish and they're religious. And I'll try to put it into context of what I mean. To be Jewish doesn't just mean to do what everyone else is doing, but rather it means to make an effort and say, okay, I want to do this because I'm Jewish and it's important to me. If it's important to you to be in touch with your parents, and I'm pretty sure that you'll write them an email or a message later in some sort of a text. If it's not important to you, you won't go through the trouble to take the phone out and to talk to them. Am I correct? Now, when it's so easy to talk to your parents when you're at home and your mom and your dad are there, it's not a big deal. You don't make an effort to speak to your parents. But if tonight you make an effort by calling them, then you're taking to heart how important it is to honor your father and your mother and to say, Mom and Dad, I'm having a good time at camp, but I'm still thinking of you. When you live in a place with a lot of Jews and a lot of kosher food and a lot of Jewish culture around you, there is one fear that I have, and it's not unfounded, and that is you take your Judaism for granted. But it's all around. You want kosher food, all the food that you have is kosher. You want to pray in a minyan? No problem. Take your choice. There are about 5 synagogues, and most of them can't stand each other. You just decide which one you want to go to, and you'll be part of them. But if you live in a place like Wellington, or if you live in a place like Oakland, or Hamilton, or if you live in any small Jewish community around the world, anything you do Jewish is significant, because you have to actually make the effort to go to that one shul that has that one minyan exactly at the time that you don't want it. Well, I'll put it into my words. Usually, when you live in a small Jewish community and you go and you pray, it's usually at the time you don't want to, in a language you don't understand, Hebrew, in a place you don't like, synagogue, asking for things you don't even need anyway. And quite frankly, that's making a significant effort to pray. And if you want kosher food, you can't just go to the supermarket. You have to go to one supermarket that might be out of your way and get the one product that's good. Now, I'll just give you one story to illustrate it. I lived in a place not like Hamilton. My meat came from Hamilton, Canada. I lived in a place called Halifax for 4 years. If I wanted to make a barbecue in the summer, I had to order the meat 3 months in advance, or leave my freezer 1 month in advance, to make the barbecue on the day I wanted to make the barbecue. And that's the way we live. Now, that meant that when we ate that piece of steak, you know how much effort went into that? 3 months of planning. What's happening around the Jewish world today is that people that live in big Jewish communities are beginning to take Judaism for granted because it's all around them, and it's not significant to them. If it's not significant, if you don't make the effort, then I hate to say this, as you grow older, the Judaism starts getting chiseled away and fading away because you never thought that it was a significant effort to do it. Allow me to illustrate it with a simple illustration. How many people around this room have their own phone? You okay there? Okay. Do you remember the day when your phone didn't work? If your phone stops working, you have to go and fix it. It's about 5 hours where you're offline. Now that could be dreadful. Everyone's messaging, Instagrams are going back and forth, and you're not there. Now, when you finally get that phone back, after those 5 terrible hours that it took him to repair it, what do you do first? You check your Instagram. You missed it so much. You probably take the phone and you kiss it, like a Sefer Torah, because, wow, did I miss this phone? Now, when Judaism is all around you, when your phone is always working, you don't think of it as an important gadget. But when you didn't charge the batteries, and you wake up in the morning and the thing is dead, and you know it's an hour before you even get 15% to check one message, all of a sudden it becomes important to you. Judaism cannot be taken for granted, and you are all lucky for one reason. There's a lot missing in terms of the Eruv and the kosher food and even your bamba, not to mention a list of other things. But anything you do is significant. You actually make the effort to actually go and do things Jewish, just like you're doing right now. You're sitting at a camp where you all left your homes in order to be together for a week in a very beautiful place, but cold. And, quite frankly, you're making an amazing effort for your Judaism and for the future. As I'm looking around the room, and what I see here is future Jewish families and the future of New Zealand. Or to be more precise, the future of the Judaism of New Zealand, because you all made a significant effort to go ahead and to take your Judaism seriously. And quite frankly, every single day, both in the morning and at night, morning service, evening service, right before we say the famous Shema, we go and we say the following words, and I'll illustrate it into English. Give us the ability to, anyone? Lishmoa, lilmod, ulelamed, lishmor, lasov, ulekayem, kol divrei, techa b'yalva. How many adjectives did I just say to basically say we're going to fulfill mitzvot? 7. You indeed go through challenges, hard. To go and take your mitzvot seriously, in my opinion, it's going to endure for generations. If it's so easy, and it comes by so easy, then quite frankly, I'm not so sure anyone here will take it significant and seriously in the future. So therefore, I look at you and I say to myself, yes, it's harder to be Jewish in New Zealand. And maybe because it's harder, you have more of a chance of making beautiful Jewish homes in the future, because you made a significant effort to come here, you make a significant effort to go to synagogue, you make a significant effort to do anything Jewish, and hopefully that will continue for many years to come. So that was my message to you, and now I'm open to any of your questions about anything, but don't illude yourself that I'll have all the answers. Go right ahead. Not everyone at once. Yes.
I want to clarify something you were saying.
Sure.
For living a Jewish lifestyle should in and of itself provide intrinsic benefits.
Sure.
So it doesn't really matter how much effort you're putting in.
I disagree. I think that living a Jewish lifestyle gives you amazing benefits. It puts a lot of significance and importance into almost every single act that you do. I'll give you an example. On the way here, the rabbi and I stopped at a gas station, petrol into the car, and usually at petrol stations, they don't want you just to fill up petrol. They want you not to just have your car drink. You drink as well and gain weight. So what do they have in every petrol station?
Snacks.
Any of them healthy? Usually not. It's there for you to gain weight. That's it. So you go to this petrol station, and the whole entire world goes there to gain weight, to have a little snack, to have a little sugar, to continue driving. What do Jews do? They do the same thing. They go to the petrol station, the petrol's in the car, they go into the snack, they look for kosher food, if possible. They obviously pay for it. Then they make a blessing before they eat it. And they eat it, and they enjoy it, and then they make a blessing after. I just said 4 mitzvot, 4 commandments, that took a simple stop at a petrol station and turned it into a religious experience. You know what you just did? First of all, you look for kosher food. That's a mitzvah in the Torah. You don't just eat anything that's out there. You have a sense of distinction, and you went for the kosher food. Number 2, you paid for it. We're not allowed to steal. We should pay for what we have. That's a mitzvah too. 3, you made a blessing before. And 4, you made a blessing afterwards. Blessing before, acknowledging God. Thank God you gave us a world, and we're now feeding from your world. Part of the things that you went and created, and then afterwards you thank God for what you ate. Small little stop at a petrol station was made into a religious experience. Now try to take, that's significant and that's a benefit, because everyone else is just eating. Animals eat, mammals breathe, Jews eat and breathe, and also make every act they do into a significant experience. Now, it's beneficial, but if you just take it for granted, yeah, big deal, I went, I got a Mars bar, I ate it, I left, I had a bracha, it doesn't mean much.
Can I clarify just a little aspect of the question?
Sure.
I think what I'm trying to get at is the experience of a New Zealander who goes to the petrol station and has to source out the kosher Mars bar and then make the kosher, make the bracha in a language they don't understand, more significant than the experience of an Israeli who goes to the gas station and everything's kosher and, you know, speaks the language and kind of something more easily. Is that more of a...
I'll say to you, not necessarily, but yes, a typical Israeli takes it for granted that there's kosher food at the petrol station. And they take it for granted that they're going to make a blessing. It's like, you know, you breathe air, you make a blessing, you have kosher food. But a New Zealander doesn't take it for granted, and therefore it becomes significant. My hope is that Israelis and other people in big Jewish communities wouldn't take it for granted. But it's very simple and natural to take it for granted when you're living in such places. So therefore, I think that when you do things and it comes with a bit of hardship and challenge, obviously it's much more significant than when it comes easy. Yes. Your name?
Noah.
Noah, go right ahead.
I agree with what you said, just about how, like, everything you do is kind of, like, more significant, it's taking a bit. However, like, I feel like I need to live in New Zealand, it's more so the fact, like, I recognize that, okay, like, I've done this and it's not meaning to it because I couldn't get to do it, but it's more so just, like, having my Judaism as a priority in the non-Jewish environment, and I think, like, that's more so the root of the problem, I would say. Like, as in, if it wasn't a priority in my life, like, I wouldn't go to the gas station and, like, outwardly go find a kosher snack. You know, like, I think that's what I personally struggle with. I don't know if anyone else does, but it's, like, kind of being inconsistent in, like, 1 month or season. It's like, yeah, like, I'm motivated and it's a priority, and then, like, other times, like, not as much. Like, yeah, I guess that's just what I'm saying.
I think what Noah's saying is extremely important, and it's a very astute comment, and that is that Noah's basically saying that if you don't make it a priority, it's not going to happen. And I'm going to add to what Noah says. No one's going to tell you off. No one's going to tell you you're doing anything wrong because, you see, everyone around you is not eating kosher. So you're just going like the flow. Everyone in general is not doing anything wrong by A, eating non-kosher food, B, not going to synagogue, C, not praying, and the list goes on and on and on. And you have to make it a priority, and you say to yourself, you know how hard and difficult it is to make it a priority? If it was easy, it would be easy to make it a priority. But if it's not easy, then to make it a priority, you're going to ask yourself, well, I can make 2 things a priority. I can watch TV, and that's easy. Or I can go ahead and look for kosher food, and that's difficult. So what am I going to do? I'll go for the easy and not for the hard. And I happen to agree with Noah. Most of us do that all the time. And I'll be honest with you, life in general, as you get older and older, is going to be about priorities. If it's important to you, in my opinion, you're going to have your brain and your heart overcome your natural instinct. Your natural instinct is to do what's easy. Your brain and your heart will tell you what's easy is not necessarily what's best. When you get to my age, today happens to be my birthday, so I'm getting older. See, when you get to my age, you don't celebrate birthdays. You just complain about how old you are. Like, I'm looking at you now, and I see your full heads of hair. And you look at the lack of my hair, and you understand I envy every one of you. You all have a full head of hair. Now, when you get to my age, it is so much easier. When you came into this building, when I went to the kitchen, they offered me a cup of coffee and a chocolate chip cookie. I say that slowly. Chocolate chip cookie. To eat it. But when you get to my age and you're carrying my weight, you ask yourself, well, it's easy to eat junk food. But it's not good for your cholesterol, it's not good for your posture, it's not good for your weight. Your doctor's not happy, your dentist is not happy. Priority-wise, they're right. Easy? It is easy to eat that chocolate chip cookie. And it took a lot of motivation and a lot of my heart and my mind overcoming a natural instinct to say, no thank you to that chocolate chip cookie. That's a small example. But take that and let's make it bigger for a moment, okay? You go, and it's easy to go to school, do exams, come home. You have to study. I understand. It's all for a degree. But In the middle of it all is a Jewish holiday. In the middle of exam time, 2 days of a Jewish holiday. Easy? Be like everyone else. You're going to take the hard way out. You're going to celebrate that Jewish holiday. That means that when that Jewish holiday is over, then you're going to have to make up all the work that you missed in school. Much more harder. But I can promise you one thing. That Jewish holiday will have a very, very special place in your heart because you worked so hard to celebrate it and yet to keep up with your school. When you work hard for something, in general, when eventually it's over, it stays with you. When you don't work hard, then quite frankly, in my opinion, it's very easy for it to fade. And the same thing is true in general in any relationship. I don't know how many of you, thank you, have boyfriends, girlfriends, or whatnot, but if you work hard on nurturing a relationship, then the relationship can work out. If you don't invest in it, then quite frankly, it's going to fade away. And that's true even for married people and absolutely for boyfriends and girlfriends. So quite frankly, I absolutely agree with Noah. The motivation, natural instinct, don't bother. But if you do it, I think the benefits are amazing. Yes, your name again.
Mia.
Yeah.
Like just building on that, how I found like peace with my Jewish identity is I like think about like instead of, admittedly not saying prayers and like eating, I think Judaism is more about appreciating what we're doing, appreciating what we're eating, and that's how I found peace, and like, I think it's really important to be mindful of what we're eating. And I think that it's like through the ages it's changed, so yes, it might seem like Israelis take it for granted, but it's so much easier, especially with our age. Like, we hate to admit it, but the old, the generations coming through are just a lot easier, and they're a lot more lazy, and we want to just take things as they come, so it's a lot easier to be immersed in it and like, be Jewish. Well, I found it a lot easier to be, and I wanted to actively be Jewish in Israel, then I'm immersed in it. Because I, like, naturally I'm just lazy and I can't be bothered, like, not as easy to, like, try really hard to be Jewish in these days. And I think it's just, like, I think as you get older, it's a lot easier to be Jewish in New Zealand because we've got good family and everything. But maybe at our age, we just, it's a lot easier to be immersed in it rather than be the outsider because, like, our brains are kind of wired so that we're not part of the norm, not as an outsider.
I'll just, before I hear Noah again, I just have to say that I agree that being Jewish means being part of the norm, plus. We're like everyone else. We read, we have to take exams, we have fun, we have school holidays, like everyone else. And we have a second floor on the first floor. And that is, we're also trying to lead a sanctified life. And you're right, when we're lazy, it's very easy to stay on the first floor and not climb the steps to go to the second floor. But the one thing I can tell you from experience is, that when you do climb and you go to the second floor, even the acts that you do on the first floor, eating, drinking, having a good time, gain so much more significance. That's what the Torah calls kiddushim kihiyu, become holy. Things that people do every day become sanctified, holier, by doing it in a certain way. We all eat, but if you say a blessing before and after on kosher food, it becomes a sanctified act. We all drink, but if you say a bracha first and after, it becomes a sanctified act, and so on and so forth. Just imagine how everyone tonight is going to be eating dinner around the world. You're going to be eating a kosher dinner. Just imagine the fact that you're doing like everyone else, food, spoons, fork, hopefully not eating with your hands, hopefully, okay, I'm trying, hopefully, and also making it into a religious act. And it's difficult to climb that second floor, I agree. And quite frankly, it doesn't get easier with time. It gets harder with time, because as you grow older, you become even more lazier. When you grow older, it's even more difficult to leave the house, even more difficult to make that effort. Yeah.
Continue. Do you think that's just a state of mindfulness, like thinking about food before you eat it and afterwards? Isn't that a state of what makes it so holy by saying the blessing instead of just appreciating the food and being mindful of what you're eating?
Mia. Mia. What Mia just said is something that bothers me greatly. I got so bothered by it that I got very upset. I got very upset, so I wrote a book about it. I called it Beyond Routine, where I basically took what Mia said and I said, with due respect, many Jews do these acts all the time, and it means nothing to them. They shake the lulav on Sukkot. They light the candles on Hanukkah. They eat the matzah on Pesach. And you know what? It means nothing to them because they're so used to it. They don't have what Mia called the mindfulness, or what I called the significance. It means nothing. You ask a Jew after Sukkot, how was it? I did a lot of exercise. What do you mean did a lot of exercise? Every day I went like this, did a lot of exercise. That's good. You ask a Jew after Pesach, how was the Seder? It was wonderful, I had a hangover from the four cups of wine. Is that all a Jew's supposed to come out of when a Jew does a mitzvah? Says Mia, that's not enough. My head is wired to do this or that. It's not just about the action. It's how does the action influence me? But I'm going to deviate a bit from my end and say, without the action, you won't have the mindfulness. So we need the action. It could be the blessing, the prayer, whatever it might be. And hopefully the mindfulness will come with it. And if not, then we're doing something wrong. We have to rethink it, and hopefully the mindfulness will come with it, or the significance, as I call it. Yes. Your name?
My name is Ariel.
Ariel, go right ahead.
So as a rabbi, I'm assuming you've read a lot of Jewish texts. Well, what I want to know is
don't assume too much, but
okay. What I want to know about is like the Kabbalah, why it's there. Should we be reading it? What's the message?
The Kabbalah.
Yeah.
I'm going to connect to what Mia said before. Everything in life that you see is going to be what you see, and it's going to be the secrets behind it. Like, what's the next activity today?
A surprise.
You're going to see the activity, whatever it's going to be, and if I ask you afterwards, your name again?
Ariel.
Ariel, what did you do? Ariel will be able to say, I went outside, I don't know, kayak. For sake of example. Fine. Now, behind the kayaking is a hidden message that B'nai Akiva is trying to tell you. You don't see the message. It's a subtle message. It's going to come through somehow. We don't know how. We don't know what. So, for example, Kabbalah comes along and says, a Jew has to, for sake of argument, light the Shabbat candles every Friday night. Very simple, you take candles, two candles, one candle, you light it, you say the blessing, you did it. That's what you see. What you don't see is, how does that influence you? How does it influence the world around you? How does it influence the entire spectrum of the universe? Kabbalah tries to deal with that issue. Namely, not what you see, but what's hidden. The subtle messages that are not so clear and seen. So in this room, I could say I see a furnace, and I see walls that can use a good paint job, and I see a ceiling that's good for acoustics, but quite frankly can fall down on us if it wasn't done properly. That's what I see. And there's fluorescent lights, because they're cheaper than regular lights. That's what I see. What I don't see is all the wiring and the installation that went into this building that allows me to put on the heat and the lights. The Kabbalah deals with the installation behind it. Now, you're asking, why do people want to learn Kabbalah? It's so esoteric. It's behind. You don't see it. The answer is, Kabbalah sometimes has something that, well, I call the regular Judaism doesn't have. It's called easy fixes. The easy way out. I'm sure you heard of Kabbalah, right? The Kabbalah means like this. You take a chicken, you cut off its leg, you put a little salt on it, and because of that, all your enemies are going to disperse. Or you take a red little bracelet, you put it around your hand, and because you put the red bracelet around your hand, no, your enemies won't hurt you. Now, that's much easier than saying pray three times a day, make an effort to have kosher food, you know, think about what you move, have mindfulness and whatnot. It's much easier to go already to the what's behind the scenes. We can't live that way, because it doesn't work that way. There's the message you see and you do, and then there's a subtle message behind it. And you can't get to the subtle message behind it without doing the regular act. Namely, if you don't press the gas pedal in the car, then the car won't go. Now, how does the car go? Well, a technician and a mechanic will be able to tell you. There's an engine, and there's a this, and there's a that. But if you don't get into the car and push the gas pedal, what good is there that there's an engine and gas and petrol and whatnot? You're not doing anything. So if you use the car, then thank God a mechanic gave you all the mechanisms for you to go ahead and drive from here to there. But if you don't drive the car, what good is it? So you can have a holy Torah scroll. It's in the ark behind you. Right? Very holy. If we don't use it, what good is it? If we don't actually read from it and learn from it, what good is it? What, that's holy? We'll give it a kiss. Move on. If we use it, then all of a sudden, all the things that come behind it, with it, and the benefits will come to par. Just like if you don't press the gas pedal, what good is the car? But if you use the car, obviously it's a great thing.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Enjoy camp, everyone. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Singers, you now please go in front of the altar. Okay, around. Rabbi, we're going to give you the second team, second group. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Enjoy camp.
Thank you. Goodbye.
My pleasure.
That was your birthday?
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Last one with juniors in the